Chapter 2. The Afghan War. The Soviet invasion of Afghanistan over the Christmas of 1979 was a profoundly shocking event for bin Laden, as it was for thousands of other devout young Muslims from around the world who were drawn to the Afghan jihad during the 1980s. It was the first time since World War II that a non-Muslim power had invaded and occupied a Muslim nation. Indeed, for bin Laden, it was the most transformative event of his life, uncoupling him from his tranquil domestic life of work and family in Saudi Arabia, and launching him into what would become effectively a full-time job helping the Afghan resistance. A key to this transformation was bin Laden's encounter with the charismatic Palestinian cleric Abdullah Azzam. Azzam was the critical force, both ideologically and organizationally, for the recruitment of Muslims from around the world to engage in the Afghan struggle against the Soviets. Azzam would become bin Laden's mentor, and together they would found the Services Office in 1984, an organization that was dedicated to placing Arab volunteers either with relief organizations serving the Afghan refugees who had flooded into Pakistan after the Soviet invasion of their country, or with the Afghan factions fighting the Soviets on the front lines. Osama bin Laden. The news was broadcast by radio stations that the Soviet Union invaded a Muslim country. This was a sufficient motivation for me to start to aid our brothers in Afghanistan. In spite of the Soviet power, God conferred favors on us so that we transported heavy equipment from the country of the two holy places, Saudi Arabia, to Afghanistan, estimated at hundreds of tons altogether, that included bulldozers, loaders, dump trucks, and equipment for digging trenches. When we saw the brutality of the Russians bombing the Mujahideen positions, by the grace of God, we dug a good number of huge tunnels and built in them some storage places. In 1982, around the time that bin Laden was starting to do something about the plight of the Afghans, I was a student at Oxford. Together with a couple of university friends, George Case and Barney Thompson, we decided to make a film about the refugees then pouring out of Afghanistan. 5 million Afghanis had been forced out of their country by the Soviets, creating the largest refugee population in the world. 3 million were in Pakistan, and 2 million were in Iran. We knew little about filmmaking, particularly myself, but our ignorance of the actual difficulties of doing such a project provided a spur to getting the project completed. In the summer of 1983, myself and my two colleagues set off to Peshawar with an Afghan cameraman who was based in London. He proved to be a somewhat difficult person, given to titanic tantrums. I took these volcanic displays of temper to be normal professional behavior. In fairness to our cameraman, we knew next to nothing about making documentaries, working in Pakistan, or the Afghan jihad. We would get a crash course in all of those subjects during the several weeks we spent in the Northwest Frontier Province and Balochistan, regions that border with Afghanistan. We documented the lives of the Afghan refugees there and the generosity of their Pakistani hosts, who had taken them in with little complaint on the basis that they were brothers in Islam. The subsequent documentary, Refugees of Faith, was shown on Britain's Channel 4 in 1984. At one point during our research, we traveled into Parachinar, a region of Pakistan that sticks like a finger into Afghanistan, where the Mujahideen would often begin their travels into the war zone. There, we were greeted by more than 100 cheering, fierce Mujahideen from one of the 7 Afghan factions battling the Soviets. The whole experience made a powerful impression on me and would launch me down the road to meet bin Laden almost a decade and a half later, not far from the place where I had first set eyes on the Afghan Mujahideen. Hatifa Azzam is the son of Abdullah Azzam. He speaks of bin Laden meeting his father in Saudi Arabia. Anyone who wanted to know anything about Afghanistan connects with my father. They met in the summer of 1984 in Jeddah. Their relationship was very strong. I was very close to Osama. I still remember him driving a Land Cruiser, desert color, in 1984. He took us to his farm 40 kilometers from Jeddah. We used to go there for hunting, whatever we find in the desert. He's really nice to his kids, treating them like they are friends. He was teaching them how to be tough, how to be a mujahid, holy warrior, trying to grow them up on jihad, on the idea of jihad thinking, and trying to build their bodies for this mission. I never saw him shouting at his kids, hitting his kids. Even his wives, they never say that he has treated them bad. I can say his wives, they like him so much. We're brothers in Islam, and we were very close to him. We used to stay in his house in Wadi Bisha Street in Al-Aziziya district in Jeddah. He had a building with four flats for the three wives and one for the guest. It's a very simple building. You can't even believe that these guys are millionaires. Jamal Ismail was studying engineering in Pakistan in the early 80s, where he met the Palestinian cleric Abdullah Azam, who would become bin Laden's mentor. He would also meet bin Laden on a number of occasions throughout his later career as a journalist. Jamal Ismail. Sheikh Abdullah Azam came in September 81 as a lecturer from King Abdulaziz University in Jeddah to Islamic University in Islamabad, Pakistan's capital. Abdullah Azam was a religious scholar. He was so much committed to his belief and very strict in religious affairs. He used to be so popular among Arab religious scholars, especially among members of the Muslim Brotherhood. He was the one who introduced the Afghan issue to all Muslims. Azam started his contacts with one of the Afghan Mujahideen groups while he was residing here. He was in Islamabad, residing officially in the university up to summer of 86, when he quit the university. During the period from 81 to 86, he was a visitor to Peshawar, the headquarters of the Afghan Mujahideen in Pakistan. In the summer of 84, when Azam went for Hajj, pilgrimage to Mecca, at that time he wrote the fatwa defending Muslim lands. Azam announced that fatwa was signed by late Sheikh bin Baz, the Grand Mufti of Saudi Arabia, and some other religious scholars from Saudi Arabia, from Syria, from Yemen. Abdullah Azam, from his 1984 book, Defense of Muslim Lands. Defensive jihad. This is expelling the kafirs, infidels, from our land, and it is fard ayn, a compulsory duty upon all. It is the most important of all the compulsory duties and arises in the following condition: if the kafirs enter a land of the Muslims. We have to concentrate our efforts on Afghanistan and Palestine now because they have become our foremost problems. Moreover, our occupying enemies are very deceptive and execute programs to extend their power in these regions. The people of Afghanistan are renowned for their strength and pride. It seems as if the glorified and exalted prepared the mountains and the land there especially for jihad. The Afghan people say the presence of one Arab among us is more loved by us than $1 million. Pay close attention to the hadith saying of the Prophet Muhammad, "To stand 1 hour in the battle line in the cause of Allah is better than 60 years of night prayer." Jamal Ismail. Azam came to Pakistan in the fall of 84. He started his services office, and he started calling Muslims from America, from Europe, and from Arab countries to come and join the Afghan Mujahideen. Jamal Khalifa, bin Laden's close friend in the university in the late 70s, later went on to marry bin Laden's half-sister, Sheikha, in 1986. He participated in the jihad against the Soviets, and later worked with the Muslim World League helping Afghan refugees. Jamal Khalifa. Osama invited me to his house in Al-Aziziya in Jeddah. He has a building there. He was 25, 26. He's already married a couple of times. He told me that Abdullah Azam was coming. I know Abdullah Azam from his books. He's a very good writer, and he's real educated, so I was really very eager to hear him when he started to talk about Afghanistan. Dr. Abdullah Azam, I can really call him the Quranic person, because when you heard him reciting the Quran, it's really different from anybody else. It's coming from his heart. It's a matter of the feeling, the way how he's reciting it. It's totally different. and sometimes he's forgetting himself when he's reciting the Quran. He is a person who has light, so you will be influenced immediately. Immediately any person will meet him, he will love him. He's unique. After I met with Abdullah Azam, I went one time to Afghanistan in 84, and I came back and I went back again in 85. Hatayfa Azam, Abdullah Azam's son. The first time I went into Afghanistan was 1984, when I was 13. At that time, I spent 2 months in Sada training camp and took anti-aircraft training. In 1985, we went to the camps for 6 months, and in 1987 was the last time we went to the camps. They used to call the sons of Abdullah Azam professionals. Boujema Bounoua, an Algerian, also known as Abu Anas, one of Abdullah Azam's first Arab recruits for the Afghan jihad, tells of his encounter with Azam and Osama. In 1984, I found a newspaper that said a group of ulema, religious scholars, are saying that Afghanistan is occupied by the Soviet Union and they are going to cancel Islamic life and replace it with atheism. In this situation, they, the ulema, explained the fatwa that 1 meter of land of Islam is under occupation. It's the duty of every Muslim to liberate it. That fatwa was signed by the group of ulema. Among them was Abdullah Azam. So, I decided to go to Afghanistan. No idea at all where Afghanistan is, how to go there, which language they speak, which airlines go there. 100 questions. I had decided to go Hajj pilgrimage in Saudi Arabia, but I went with this idea. If I find a way to go to Afghanistan, I will go. Once I was walking around the Kaaba, the sacred rock at the center of Mecca, and I found Abdullah Azam with his children and his wife. I asked him, "Are you Abdullah Azam? I've read the fatwa. I'm from Algeria and I saw your signature among the ulemas saying that jihad in Afghanistan is a duty. And if I decide to go, what can I do?" "Yeah," he told me, "after 15 days, I would be in Islamabad, the capital of Pakistan. If you come to Islamabad, just call me from the airport and I will give you the address to come to my home." I took the flight. I found Sheikh Abdullah and he told me, "There is a group of guests here in my house. We will wait for you to have dinner with us." One of them was Abdullah Sadi. He was the constructor of Osama bin Laden. He was an engineer to guide the bulldozers. Osama borrowed him from the bin Laden family company to work for him in Afghanistan. The second day, Sheikh Abdullah told me, "I'm going to Peshawar after 3 days. We will go together." The flight was at 4 p.m. and around 1 we were having lunch. Somebody was sitting on my right and Sheikh Abdullah told me, "This is your brother, Osama bin Laden." I told him, "Welcome, nice to meet you." I remember the guy who was introduced to me, very shy and very, very well-mannered, speaks very slowly. After 1 hour in that meeting, I can't remember that I heard 2 or 3 words from that guy, Osama. He was mid-20s. I'm the 14th of the Arabs who arrived in Pakistan to help the Afghan jihad. A very small group, and all of us under the control of Sheikh Abdullah Azam. Sheikh Abdullah has this reputation to push people. That's what he did with Osama later. He sees what talent you have, journalist or organizer or fighter. Sheikh Abdullah was really an angel inside. Late 84, beginning 85, the founders of the Services Bureau, also known as the Services Office, was Osama, Sheikh Abdullah, and me. Sheikh Abdullah told me that we have found this bureau to gather the Arabs and to send them inside Afghanistan instead of going to the guest house of someone like Afghan leader Gulbuddin Hekmatyar. It's better to save them from the political games of the Afghans. So we need to stay in a separate guest house. We are here as servants. We are proud to serve the boots of the Mujahideen inside Afghanistan. We are not here to guide them, to tell them what to do. We are here to serve them, to liberate their land. It's one of our aims to get deep information about what is happening inside Afghanistan. I told Sheikh Abdullah I would like to go with this caravan to Mazar-i-Sharif in the far north of Afghanistan. We were maybe 300 Afghan mujahideen, and that trip took 40 days walking. I lost my toenails on the way. And when the villagers hear that among the caravan there is an Arab, All the village's people come out of their home to see this Arab because they remember that the Arabs speak the language of the Prophet. They came from the land of Mecca and Medina. We started learning the local language, and we found it very, very necessary. When we used to cross the villages, the people come from everywhere, and they used to ask us to give speech in the mosques. And when we speak, people just crying, Allahu Akbar, God is great. Hundreds of people, some of them, came from 3 hours away, bringing their grandson or granddaughter. The feeling which I used to touch up to now, I can't find it anywhere. I used to feel that I am an angel. I am walking in the air. Now I'm doing my duty, making my God happy, helping brother Muslims, and no pressure of life, sitting with the Afghans. These simple people all were loving the Prophet, all loving Quran, making jihad to liberate land. Very exciting in a positive way. We stayed in Mazar Sharif for 2 months. I think these months give me the experience of 5 years. Pushed me how to act in a responsible way. I decided that our participation in Afghanistan is not just to take a Kalashnikov and to fire on the Soviets and be shaheed, martyred, and that's it. This is a very, very, very small part of our duty. I recognize that these people need to be educated. These people need to stay at their home, not to be refugees to Pakistan. In order to do that, you have to fund salaries for the ulema, clergy, to stay inside Afghanistan, and you need to build schools. You need to build hospitals. When I went back to Peshawar, I went to Sheikh Abdullah. He was eager to welcome a group who had come from inside deep Afghanistan. Sheikh Abdullah told me, now you have to go to the Hajj in Saudi Arabia with me. Sheikh Abdullah saw it as useful and beneficial to bring me to Saudi. I went in 1985. We stayed in Mecca, and Sheikh Abdullah used to give speeches because in that period he was the star of jihad. Every year, people waiting for Abdullah Azam, what statement is he going to give when he comes to Saudi Arabia? Sheikh Abdullah finished his speech and said, we have a young man with me who just recently came from Mazar-i-Sharif, the furthest front inside Afghanistan, and he saw exactly what is happening inside Afghanistan. I call him to come to the stage to speak. I couldn't. Too shy. And so we spent 3 or 4 days there, and we were living in the house of Osama bin Laden in Mecca. The entire bin Laden family are hosting people, and they had cold water and fruit and food and buses to take people. And Osama was very polite in his dealings and very generous. Wael Julaidan, a Saudi from a Medina family involved in real estate, was a student in the United States as the war in Afghanistan heated up in the mid-80s. Julaidan's account here illustrates the effectiveness of Abdullah Azam's recruiting tours. I lived in Jeddah for 3 years, from 81 to 83. Osama, we see him from time to time in our social activities, but then in 85, that's when I went, I start to create some relationship with him. For such a power like the Soviets' Red Army to come and attack such a poor country like Afghanistan, everybody was unhappy. Osama was so much feeling responsibility toward the Afghan issue, and he wanted to extend whatever help he can for the Afghans. Sheikh Abdullah Azam had given that issue a lot of effort to show how this invasion could be dangerous to all the region. And he also came to the States in December 84, and he talked about Afghanistan. I listened to his lecture, and he talked about how much people there are in need of everything, and actually I felt the responsibility, at least, to go and visit there to see if I can be of any help. Finally, I decided to visit Afghanistan. That was in April 85. I was 28. I was doing my master's degree at that time in range management, developing the range for animal grazing at the University of Arizona in Tucson. I was really appreciating the American system, the respect of the individual, and the freedom we had been given, the chance to talk about anything that we are interested in. I came to Saudi Arabia, visited my family, and then I went to Pakistan. I found that the size of the problem, it's so big, it's so large, and that's why I agreed with Dr. Azam. I would like to mainly concentrate on the relief work. So, from 85 to 94, I lived in Pakistan. A vital project of Azam and bin Laden's services office was the Jihad magazine that the organization started publishing in the fall of 1984. The magazine appeared twice a month, with news of the war in Afghanistan and a focus on Arab efforts to help the Afghan Jihad. Over time, the magazine became increasingly professional. In its first 6 months, the magazine was an amateur production in black and white, while subsequent issues were well laid out and featured a wealth of color photographs. The magazine would prove to be vital for fundraising and recruiting Muslim volunteers from around the world for the Afghan Jihad. In the summer of 2004, I was browsing in a bookshop in central Kabul, looking for books about jihadist movements, when I was approached by the owner. As I was chatting with him, I realized that he was Sultan Khan, the central character in The Bookseller of Kabul, an international bestseller that portrayed a man who had heroically preserved thousands of books from the Taliban, yet treated much of his own family harshly, particularly his first wife, whom he had recently displaced with a much younger new wife. Khan took me into a dusty back room, piled high with mounds of books, and pointed to a dozen or so volumes bound in gold, green, and brown. That, he said, is 10 years of the Jihad magazine. As I leafed through thousands of pages of the Arabic language magazine, I realized I had stumbled upon a gold mine. This was effectively the in-flight magazine of the services office, an organization that would morph in part into Al-Qaeda. And in these pages was a decade of their own history as they recorded it contemporaneously, long before they or the world thought of them as players on the stage of history. Jamal Ismail, the Palestinian student living in Pakistan during the 1980s, was one of the first journalists to work for Jihad magazine. In 1984, I was a student in Peshawar Engineering University. My studies were all in English. The Arabs, none of them were able to speak or read English. They asked me to help them in translation of some news items from the Pakistani daily newspapers, some news which they used to get from the Afghan groups. We were receiving the news from Afghanistan in a magazine called Al-Mujahid, the Holy Warrior. When it stopped publishing, Sheikh Abdullah Azam picked up the idea and changed the name from Al-Mujahid to Al-Jihad. Initially, the first 1, 2, 3, or 4 issues was printed on a printing press in Peshawar. Extracts from Jihad magazine will appear throughout this book, the first time that it has appeared in English. Jihad magazine, issue 1, December 28, 1984, lead article. To the supporters of Jihad. To all the supporters of the Jihad on earth. We remind you that the Afghan Jihad is a necessity for the Muslims, even if the number of Russian enemies and others are double your number. And in God's name you will defeat your enemies, because one of you is superior to 10 of your enemies. And even in the worst case, you are double them. The call to Jihad in God's name is a part of this earth, and it is the satisfaction of the conscience. And it leads to eternal life in the end, and is relief from your earthly chains. Abu Anas, one of the co-founders of the services office. The main aim of Sheikh Abdullah to build or to create the Jihad magazine is to inform the Arab world what is happening in Afghanistan. Informing them, help funding, recruit people. Eventually, we printed 70,000 copies, an issue. And most of them go to the United States because we had 52 centers in the United States. The main office was in Brooklyn, also Phoenix, Boston, Chicago, Tucson, Arizona, Minnesota, Washington, D.C., and Washington State. Every year, Azam used to go to the United States. The wealthy of the United States can help much more than Muslims who are living in poor countries or under dictatorship. Jihad magazine, issue 29, April 1987. To our community in America. The magazine is receiving a warm welcome from Muslims in the United States, and so the magazine is looking to increase its circulation in a massive way. This is done with the help of God and our good brothers who assisted in making this happen. And they have tried their best to make sure circulation increases to anyone who is interested in knowing the latest news about their Mujahideen brothers. Due to increased demand from the United States, We will be sending them our magazines from our office in the United States by the 31st of the month, God willing. And we hope that our brothers who are interested in subscribing to send their request to our American office, whose address is on page 3, so that the magazine can be received more quickly, God willing. And we ask all our brothers who are able to help support the magazine's efforts to increase its readership. And we ask Islamic centers also to help us in this endeavor, as well as ask God to bless us and look after us. Jamal Ismail. I think after the issue 25 or maybe 30, Jihad magazine was printed in Lahore, and after that, we shifted printing it to Karachi for commercial reasons, because instead of bringing it from Lahore by truck, we were sending it abroad from Karachi directly. Mostly it was circulated in Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, Jordan and the United States, and some European countries. There were some subscribers in Northern Africa. It was available in all the markets in Saudi Arabia. It was not expensive. The main thing of the magazine was not commercial. The main purpose for it is to tell Muslims all over the world what is happening in Afghanistan and to generate funds for Afghan Mujahideen. Initially, we were four: the editor, the typist, me, and someone who was going on a motorbike to bring the news from here and there. Sheikh Abdullah Azam asked us to make it better. We were in need to recruit more people. We had to recruit from Arabs who were coming to participate in Afghan jihad. Those who came in 84 or in early 85, most of them were coming for jihad, which means fighting. Finally, Sheikh Abdullah Azam started campaigning for the magazine among the Arabs, saying that if you work for the magazine inside Afghanistan, maybe in the eyes of Almighty Allah, your achievements will be more important than carrying a Kalashnikov. Jihad Magazine, issue 27, February 1987. Jihad, Not Terrorism, by Abdullah Azam. Thanks be to God, and we thank Him and ask Him for His help and forgiveness. Every time the word jihad is mentioned, sin springs up and runs away. And every time the Muslims talk about defending their rights, the Western media comes in and libels the name of the Muslims and portrays them as extremists and beasts. Maybe the Muslims forgot the wars that occurred in the last century between France, Britain, and other European countries. And maybe the Muslims forgot the hardships of two world wars created by the West and lasting 25 years, which killed 50 million people and left people injured, maimed, and wounded. It was a gruesome war built on greediness and small hopes. And maybe the Muslims are not aware of the cultural war being waged on them to libel the name of jihad in order to portray the Muslims as bandits and bloodthirsty warriors, and in order to make the Muslims leave jihad, and so they create stories about killing hostages so that they can portray Muslims as killers. America is the new world leader, or better yet, a country which has built its empire on the backs of its original inhabitants, the Indians, who they wiped out and who now number less than a million, who have been put into little reservations as if they were museum pieces. And they still use kerosene lamps instead of electricity in the Midwest. And those were the Red Indians who were the original inhabitants of America. We are not ashamed of our religion or the order given to us by God. We say it frankly, without playing with words or deception. Plain and straight. One, that jihad is a religious duty for the Ummah, Muslims around the world, so as to free the people and give them Islamic justice and protection of the religion. Two, that the religion of God and the blessed religion is that of all of humanity, and we want to spread it all over all four corners of the world. Three, jihad in God's will means killing the infidels in the name of God and raising the banner of His name. And we do not want to make this great jihad only words to be said on podiums or articles to be published in newspapers. Jihad is done in the will of God only if you fight the infidel with the sword until he submits to Islam. And nothing is left to block you from the Afghan jihad. Abu Walid al-Misri, a confidant of bin Laden's who wrote a history of the Afghan Arabs, discusses the magazine. Jihad magazine was among the most important projects established by Azam. This magazine was the main communication means between Arab youth in various places and the jihad network in Afghanistan. The intellectual edifice built by Dr. Azam through this magazine is still the supplying factor for the migrating Arab volunteers, most of them from Saudi Arabia, the Gulf States, and Yemen. These volunteers have cruised the fields of jihad around the world.